The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Rockin' Robin Hood says, Jeff, you are 100 times better musician than Kurt Cobain. No, I enjoy the compliment, but it's false, so I will reject it. I am not a better musician than Kurt Cobain, because Kurt Cobain had an innovative quality to what he did with his voice. Which I haven't gotten there. I can play the voices and singing of other artists, but to be creating myself, to come up with something like you don't get this from Papa Jeff. You have to have Kurt Cobain. And the variations of intonations that he used, the kind of doing his own chorus with his own screams and spits, that is absolutely innovative from Kurt Cobain, and it was unprecedented what he did. So no, I am not a better musician than Kurt Cobain. By the way, I have started a YouTube channel if you want to follow my musical experimentation, Dubstep Classicals. It's my way back onto YouTube, so I've been talking to a lot of creators of back in the days, and a lot of people want to go back to YouTube. I'm not as excited as they are, because I know the path there is a path of self-censorship and oppression, and I don't enjoy the doing a show under cognitive oppression. But somehow people are thinking that YouTube will welcome us back. So I started this Dubstep Classicals channel first because I'm playing a lot with AI and music these days. And so I have these products that I find this fucking genius music. Sometimes the AI will just come out with something like this. This is fucking genius. This is music I've been wanting to develop and hear for a decade or more, and now you have AI, it will do that in 1 minute for you. It's amazing. So I've been starting this YouTube channel because it's gonna give us a door back into YouTube. If I ever want to slowly bring back the shows onto YouTube, I'll have a channel that's already built with a following there. So go follow the channel. And if you don't like dubstep music, well, just don't follow it. But I personally find this music of very high quality. I didn't know that AI was at that point. And I think there are opportunities on the market. I believe that you could be the middleman between AI and content creation. There's a lot of people, they're programming a game, they need assets, they need music, the people who are editing video, they need theme music, they need epic cinematics. And if AI is that good, then you can easily produce 400 different songs in a day that fits all needs. And I was thinking about Audio Jungle. Now, I was talking about Audio Jungle last Friday as an opportunity to make money. Now, I looked at the Audio Jungle. I looked back at it. And it turns out they don't accept new creators precisely because too many people show up probably with AI solutions for music generation. So they have completely barred new creators at Audio Jungle in the audio category. But there are, I'm sure there will be alternatives for free markets of sound effect and music for creators. So yes, I think that AI is better than most people know in terms of generating music. That is my current take. Creator Clash, a boxing event that used to be hosted by iDubbbz in 2022. And now they are announcing that they are canceling. They will be reimbursing all PPV ticket holders. Automatic refund. No action required. Grok explains that Creator Clash is a charity boxing event series founded by YouTuber iDubbbz, featuring creators fighting for charitable causes. The third edition, planned for 2025, was canceled today amid drama, low ticket sales, and backlash from controversies like iDubbbz failed content cap on comedian Sam Hyde, his public apologies, and event mismanagement. So apparently, there was too much drama around this, too much hate, too much drama, and not enough ticket sales around this. I mean, the YouTube community is tearing itself apart, and they're not even a community, really. They're just a bunch of creators who have been selected by the system because they were not edgy enough, so they were able to stay on YouTube. And then you get, of course, you get the whole Zionist crew, Ethan Klein, complaining about this boxing event, and somehow they win, somehow they shut it down. They literally shut it down. They shut it down. Ruff Sternwood says AI will have the same problem as New D Girls, can produce 4 trillion songs per day but needs more simps. Well, I mean, needs more simps. The output for royalty-free type of music, the kind that you would buy on Audio Jungle, the output is the continued production of podcast, art, games. This will always go on. There will always be people needing assets for these things. So the simps are, in this case, are basically production houses that are tired of paying $60,000 a year for a graphic designer, and they would like to have their little sprites, their little 2D sprites and 3D models and musics created by someone who sells it to them for $100 instead. So that's the market of artistic assets, and it's a big market. End of the line, Joel says, there are people creating videos showing automatic workflow shortcuts to create infinite AI slop social media. Some people are earning huge money each month from this slop. Absolutely. Now, I think that, whatever I will do in my experimentation with AI, I don't want to end up like this. My point with AI is not we can produce infinite slops. My point is, if you can through selection and through intelligent engagement with the AI, if you can bring it to a point where it's comparable to an artist that would have worked, a year on it, then you start talking. Then you're starting to talk about cutting the grass under the feet of the market. And, you know, again, I don't want to make this show about AI because I know people are tired. I've done two shows about AI, but I'm listening to this and this would have taken a good musician a whole year to get to this. Composing music, like you're stuck in front of the piano and you hate yourself because everything you try is just not good enough. It sounds better in your head than it does on the real piano. AI just removes the pain. Soft playing. Extremely high tonality. Build up that mixes classic and dubstep. Dubstep passages are... This is hard. I tried learning to make dubstep, so I know how hard it is to get there. It is freaking hard to come up with, okay, I start from a boom, boom, I have my bloop song, and now I want to integrate it to a beat. The number of things you have to consider, it's painful. Anyways, leaving aside the AI question... currently, the mood on the internet is that people are pissed at... by the way, Greatest Whitest North, are you in the chat? Today is the day where you will be honored in the outro music. So if you're in the chat, start enjoying yourself. Open up a drink or whatever it is that you have at home. This outro will be a outro honoring your great donations to the show. Also honoring other people who across the years have been giving me big amounts that have maintained my capacity to produce this show, even if it's a small show. For those who would like to support, use the streamlabs.com/JFGtonight/tip link in the description. You can also use Entropy. The Streamlabs super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Neymar fan says, Jeff, are you going to go see the Superman movie? It's a politically divisive movie with James Gunn calling Superman an illegal immigrant. Oh, bro. I hate when they introduce leftist morality to movies. I might go see it to see just how bad it is. But, if I compare with Terminator 6, that was a fucking pain. Like to have the whole story of the Terminator to be remodeled around the idea of abortion of babies and illegal migrant stuff and Mexico. Fucking pain in the ass. So Superman, I guess I'm gonna watch it maybe to criticize it, but that's it. End of the line, Joel says, have you tried other competitor products to Suno? I've seen ones where you whistle and it produces fully instrumentation from the melody. Oh, that's interesting. I would like to know what that is, what that service is, because I've been in a situation where with Kurt Cobain, trying to reproduce Kurt Cobain, I have been reaching the point where I would like to be able to whistle to the AI how Kurt Cobain would sing it. And I couldn't do that. So perhaps it would help me to do a jump through this service and then bring it back into Suno for completion. That would be extremely interesting. Today, the mood is disappointment around Jeffrey Epstein because people are, oh, there was no file. Oh, You want us to believe there was no file? You want us to believe there was no extortion? But I've been saying it for months and now years, in fact. There will be nothing super exciting in the Jeff Epstein release because Zionist circles of friendship like this, they operate in very old fashion. It's not they don't keep documents. It's like there's not Jeff Epstein noting on a notepad, "Today I have extorted Bill Clinton. I hope that he does what I threaten. I hope that he does what I asked of him, or else I will kill him." That's not how it works. You're not gonna have lists. You're not gonna have official ways, methods, and people are asking for a list of Epstein clients. But these people were friends with Epstein, and it was developed in the form of friendship. And it's not the job of the police to smear anyone who was friend with Epstein's. To an extent, like I've been making the case before, I should be on that list by that standard. Like, I should be on the Epstein list, and yet I don't rape kids. I don't even engage in prostitution. I mean, I remember when I was a young adult, and my cousins were drinking beer with me. And eventually I got married, and the day of my marriage, there was this whole part. The day before my marriage, there was this whole bar meeting. Let's drink beer. And then there was the whole idea of going to the naked dancers. I was like, "I'm not going to the naked dancers, guys. You can go and have fun." And they were like, "Well, it's your marriage, JF. Why don't you come with us to the strippers?" Because I don't like prostitution. I was in the entourage of Jeff Epstein because I was curious about the man, and I wanted to take him out of this sexual dependence that he had. Because sexual dependence, sexual addiction, or to just be addicted to the party life, that is ultimately leaving control of woman to you. Like, Jeff Epstein, although he's never presented in that way, he was a victim of woman, ultimately. And I would have liked if he could have moved on from this, because if you become so sanctifying of sex, you leave all the power to the objects of your sex, which is woman. And they get a lot of power over you. They can threaten you. They can extort you. And I'm sure some of these women actually had amounts of money paid to them to stay silent. So that's not a good life to live. And I wanted to take him out of this life. But the idea that because you were in the entourage of Jeff Epstein, you should be on a list of cancellation. I don't know why the MAGA boomers are pursuing this, because really, we don't want this. It's none of your business, really. If someone actually engaged in pedophilic prostitution with Epstein, then yeah, perhaps it would be deserved to be exposed. But as far as we know, that's not what he was doing. He was taking young, capable of consenting women and featuring them in some massage session where, of course, the massage would turn into sex. This is, and in many of the jurisdictions where he did it, it wasn't even illegal. So the only aspect that was illegal is that, yes, he did live in the US and coordinate all of this in the US, but he was sometimes doing this in international space, on planes, and on some island. I don't know what would be the jurisdiction on this island, US Virgin Island. Maybe it was the US, but I don't know. Marby Dog says, "The list matters because we want to know who's being blackmailed." Well, you're not going to have a collection of memories of proper organized blackmail by Jeff Epstein. So that simply does not exist. People are asking for something that does not exist. Let me drink something here. People are asking for something that does not exist. And this all stems to Alex Jones, basically. Alex Jones is at the source of all this many years ago, where, okay, there was the whole crumbling of the Jeff Epstein empire, and Alex Jones pushed his explanation and said, yeah, that's how they blackmail. And there was this whole conception suddenly, without proof, really, without proof that that Jeff Epstein was the mastermind of such an operation. There was this whole assumption that the entirety of the political class, basically, was under the claw of Jeff Epstein blackmail. Now, I think that was giving him a little too much credit compared to the actual size of his influence. But people have elevated him into a myth, basically. And they've come to expect things that the government cannot deliver today because it doesn't exist. I'm sure there was some degree of extortion, subtle, between the lines in the network of friendship. But mostly it was extortion through giving. It was just that people expected the generosity of Epstein, and therefore they were acting in line with what he was demanding, and it was more loose. You won't have a little notebook of all these acts of extortion. Rodriguez says, so do you think that Dan Bongino and Cash were told to drop it, or shown an empty folder and told that's all they have, but they did have gigabytes of video and security footage of all of his property? Well, I think they got dumped all sorts of data. But then, it's like, what do you do? What do you do if let's say there's a list. Let's say that Epstein has an Excel sheet where there are names. What do you do with names? To a certain extent, you would be violating people's right to privacy, because it's like, okay, let's say JF was on there in the Excel sheet. What does that mean? Is JF a pedo because he was in an Excel sheet of Jeff Epstein? I think that they had a lot of data that they probably said, look, nothing conclusive from this data. Nothing we can do about it. We can't even go out publicly because it's violating privacy. So it's like, so they put together everything they could release. And then they tried to release it and say, will that satisfy the people? And now you have these crazy MAGA boomers, like Q-tards, literally Q-tards. The people who literally thought that some 4chan anonymous account was telling them the future from inside the Trump administration. This kind of deluded, psychotic boomers. They're now turning against Trump. MAGA fans are raging at Trump on Truth Social right now. These are just some of the comments under his post praising the FBI. Many are saying he's engaging in a cover-up. MAGA civil war continues. So lots of people disappointed, but it's like you guys have created this environment where you've expected something from the government that they could not give because it doesn't exist. FBI conclude that Jeffrey Epstein had no clients, didn't blackmail anyone, and definitely killed himself. So, like, this is a kind of mocking title. But yeah, you're like this, but unironically. Yes, he did kill himself, because he didn't want to fall for everything that he had done. And what he had done was probably not as big as the MAGA tards think, but it was something enough probably to make a lot of time in jail. So he didn't want to suffer through this, because he was an hedonist who was just loosely pursuing the Jewish way of living, which is social friendship, circles of trust, circles of favoritism. Hey, does your child need a job? Does your sister need a job? Do you need a job? And that kind of thing. And yes, it's a form of extortion. And yes, we should pay attention to this. But I don't think it's criminal in the way people think. Now, although I do not join the people who had high expectations on these files, I do think that this meme was fucking hilarious. No clients, no blackmail, just the love of the game. Oh, man. I love this meme because that's actually what I've been saying about Jeff Epstein for years now. Yeah, that was pretty much him. He was just a pervert. Okay. He was a pervert with huge problem with respect to sex. But it was mostly self-destructive. And there was some degree of information gathering probably that he was engaging in. And of course, like any powerful Jew, just by accident, like powerful Jews, they will end up creating networks of favoritism. They don't even want to do it. It's like it's such a basic instinct. They can't help it. And Jeffrey Epstein couldn't help it. And now the left is laughing at the MAGA-tards. So CNN says Jeffrey Epstein died by suicide and there's no client list, Justice Department says. So they're basically happy because the conspirationists of the right have been basically debunked and frustrated by their own guy, Trump. Based Saxon says, did you ever have phone calls with Jeff or just communicate via email? I never spoke to him directly, neither through phone. Only emails, and then I interacted with his assistant in New York at some point. That's all. A joint federal immigration operation is currently sweeping through downtown Los Angeles. They brought horses. So they're basically literally just sweeping entire parks, trying to kick out the illegal migrants so they can capture them as they flee toward other parts of the city. There's something laughable about all this. Like, this is purely for spectacle. I mean, you can see there's no illegal migrant here. There's no illegal migrant here. So there's probably no illegal migrant here, you know? So it's, but I guess it's part of, it's part of the process where there are so many of them living through different parts of town, living on the streets. I guess they're just trying to push them in a corner and capture them. The Daily Wire is desperate. Now they got Isabel Brown to start a show. I don't know who that person is, but let's listen.
The moment you've waited for is here. I am so excited to finally share with you guys that my podcast, The Isabel Brown Show, has a brand new home with The Daily Wire. Earlier this year, I transitioned into the most important role of my entire life. Mom. And seeing the world through my daughter's eyes and a fresh perspective has only given me more passion for our generation to fight on offense as hard as we can for what is good and true and beautiful. So when I got a call from the new leadership team at The Daily Wire about expanding our Truth Seekers community to include the Daily Wire audience, the stars aligned and we have been hard at work together ever since. This is a team that is fully committed to honoring my independent voice while also taking The Isabel Brown Show to a level you have never before.
Generally, a woman cannot deliver for a very long time in terms of public speaking because it starts, of course, with the visual attraction. Okay, if she's young and beautiful, she's gonna rise. But then the problem is to have something intelligent to say. And as I said back in the day, is the job of a YouTuber is not to have something intelligent to say. It's that the 300th thing that you have to say has to be interesting enough that people are even caring about hearing it. So it's not about your best idea. It's about can you grind through a slow news day? Do you have anything important to say? I've never heard this girl about politics, but I see Christian 1776. She talks about fighting hard. It's kind of the second layer extremist of the internet kind of thing, where they're not as extremist or radical as I am, but somehow they survived on YouTube, and because ultimately they were saying nothing, because ultimately these words are quite empty, you know, fight hard for what is true and beautiful. Okay, what does that mean? Do we organize the boys club of Gavin McInnes? What does that mean? Do we have people on the street fighting, or is it a spiritual fight?
Or scene. On the revamped show, coming to you later this year from my studio here in Washington, D.C. every day.
Oh, boy, and you're in Washington, D.C. on top of it?
You can expect larger-than-life guests, deeper questions.
By the way, those are not natural teeth.
More topics, and so much more. And I'm super excited to be diving into bonus content for the Daily Wire audience, too. And don't worry, you'll still be able to watch and listen to The Isabel Brown Show everywhere you got it before, including on my YouTube channel and across podcast platforms. There is still so much more information to come.
Okay, well, impossible to know what this woman is about based on this. I don't know, but I'm guessing that if she got selected by the Daily Wire, she's probably aligned with them and with the Israeli causes. End of the line, Joel says, Daily Wire have a history of keeping one generic femoid on their panel for the kosher simp cohort to sub to. Oh yeah, and that was another girl who got fired recently, or she left. I don't know exactly. Rodita says, Daily Wire should hire Lauren Sutton. She might be worth it if someone writes Lauren's stuff. The problem of women speaking publicly, I've seen it from all angles, having a woman co-host at some point on the public space. In the end, my conclusion is women are just not prepared. They're just not prepared to be public speakers. Let's talk about this microbe, because I think it has some interesting features, but I think that the journal that covers the story is completely wrong. Neymar says, Jeff, what are the origins for your views on women? Experience, evolution, research? Well, I would say mostly empiricism. I'm an empiricist, as Stefan Molyneux once said. I'm an empiricist. And so ideally, when I started my life, oh, and Greatest Whitest Snort is now on the regular chat. You're going to love this outro, Greatest Whitest. You are featured prominently when the show ends. It's going to be your big moment. So my views on women, I started in life with a lot of assumptions. And all of these assumptions were just dumped on by reality. And it's like, wow, it's very hard to maintain those assumptions in front of reality. So my assumptions were as follows. Every human being has potential. There are no meaningful racial differences that are worth caring about. And ultimately, men and women have the same capacities, other than a few details about physical stuff. They are effective. They have the same potential that could be developed in terms of intellectual contributions. And year after year, my life as an adult has just shown me that everything I believed in was wrong. Racial differences are massive. The people of different races are forming their ethnocentric communities around hating you, and you're not gonna surpass that through love or through through giving them equality. The more you give them, the more they will take, and they're gonna then ask for more. So there is no reconciliation of the races happening. They hate you. They will mess up with your life in any way they can. And then they will turn around and argue that they're not racist and that, oh no. But they exhume trouble. They will exhume trouble in your life in a way that messes it up. And they are doing it on racist, anti-white, on an anti-white drive, but they won't ever admit it, and they probably don't even know it. It's just they are programmed to do it. Now, as far as women goes, what I have discovered is that women are just, they are a different part of the human species. They have evolved in a different niche. And as a result, they have become extremely evil. They have become extremely vicious. They are bubbles of resentment inside of them that just, they can keep the lid onto it for social appearance for a while, but it's gonna pop at some point. And you're going to discover that all women have this just very evil core inside of them, and that no, they're not capable of extending into the genius category or pushing civilization forward or discovering technology, because these things are so hard to do when you get in that path that women are ultimately not, they are not evolved and trained to go into that dark place where self-sacrifice is needed, because ultimately they have too high of an opinion of themselves. And inevitably, to pursue something very rare, something like very painful, something very hard to do, like making a genius contribution to society, you need inevitably to have some form of self-deprecation, because you need ultimately to be convinced that your entire life is worth the sacrifice to go there and even to get a chance of getting there. And that kind of sacrifice, you cannot hold yourself to be a high value thing. And women, unfortunately, being in this social world, they perceive themselves as part of a social space, and they always attribute value to themselves into this process. So they cannot do the self-sacrifice, because what they would sacrifice in that way would be too high value in their perspective. Unconventional wisdom says self-centered, pleasure-focused, not good for anything involving advancing civilization. Exactly. So this whole self-sacrifice is probably a thing of the mentality of man, and stemming from our engagement in military things, you know, basically men were headed and going voluntarily to their own death just to push back whatever empire they were pushing to protect their existing family, and going to war like this and being evolutionarily rewarded for it. Women have never known this. For women, the perspective of a war is, what do I do when my men lose? And this is where the vicious core helps. Because if you're able to switch, if you're able to say, oh, well, I got raped by the victor, but, you know, it wasn't so much of a rape, and maybe I can just continue living. Now you get evolutionarily rewarded for viciousness, lack of loyalty, detachment. Whereas the men got evolutionarily rewarded, at least in a stable society with stable military practices, the men got evolutionarily rewarded for self-sacrifice. Ruth Sternwood says, women, of course, are of great value, but today they misattribute the nature of their value. Absolutely. Doubting Thomas sends a super chat. Thank you so much. He says, theory. Evangelical Zionism stems from Sola Scriptura, which centers divine authority in Jewish written scripture, unlike Catholic /Orthodox traditions that include Gentile tradition and broader theology. Okay, so you're saying the evangelicals of the American tradition, they have fed into a trap by being so Bible-centered because the Bible was carrying the Zionist message in the Old Testament, and as opposed to the Catholic and Orthodoxy branches, who had the advantage of having been diluted with other local traditions, broader theology, certain practices that are mystical in nature. And as such, they have diluted the Jewish core that was in the Bible. It's interesting. It's interesting. You know, I don't know. I don't know. Because although the Catholic Church and the Catholic tradition may survive, I don't know if the people that supported Catholicism, I don't know if they will survive. You know, because when you're talking about a central institution like this, that is so disconnected from its base people, the institution could survive while also not giving a great layer of protection to their constituents. So my question is, are the Catholics of the 16th century, have they survived up to today? Are they in threat right now? Has their religion been inviting in threats and invaders? Have they been guided with too much openness of heart that has led their society to be weak? I don't know. I don't have an answer, but your theory is interesting. Your theory is very interesting. But let's talk about this microbe. Microbe with a bizarrely tiny genome, maybe evolving into a virus. That, I suggest, is a complete inversal of reality. Because what did they discover in this paper? A cellular entity retaining only its replicative core, hidden archaeal lineage with an ultra-reduced genome. So they discovered that, and this tells you just how much there is left to discover. There is so much left to discover in biology, and I wish people read this book and said, let's go out there and find the microbes that JF predicts. Because we're very close here. We're very, very close. Those microbes are a little too modern. But a few hundred million years before would be the microbes that are relevant to my predictions. That being said, I have speculated about these microbes before. Yes, well, Ruth Sternwood says these are archaea, though. Well, precisely. Do you know that we have more similarity in the DNA, replicative mechanism with archaea than we do with bacteria? And therefore, archaea, although it's been given the name archaea, at a time where we thought they were more distant from us genetically. But eventually, genetic research has revealed that archaea is closer to eukaryotes than bacteria. That is the current mainstream belief, which is why I made this drawing in this book. Can we get not too much light to... Oh my god, it's hard to... This camera is just not adjusting its gain. Let's adjust it manually here. See, that's why I made this drawing here. And you'll see at the end, there's archaea and eukaryotes. Now, clearly, in the way I ended up my graph of life, those are my important predictions. They are all past. They are all before the archaea split. But I did include a bacteria archaea split in which eventually some branch of archaea became eukaryotes. Why did I do this? because I've speculated in the revolutionary phenotype, I've speculated that the nucleus was originally an infection, because the nucleus carries a core of DNA, but it seems like it wouldn't be able to live on its own. But it also seems like it's specialized in instrumentalizing the rest of the cell to its own benefit. So what is that? What is this instrumental relationship? Plus the fact that the nucleus has a double membrane of fats, it looks like an ingested virus that wasn't digested, basically. A virus that made it in, but that stayed there and continued existing in a cell. So all of these features. One, the nucleus has a double layer of fat, so it looks like an encompassment of another life form that already had its layer of fat, plus this one comes in. Now you have two layers of fat. Double coat. And instrumentalization of the rest of the cell, where the nucleus in the modern cell is equipped with all these channels that are extremely limitative of what can enter the nucleus and what can come out. And basically, the nucleus has been solely specializing in reproducing, replication of the DNA, and preservation of the DNA, probably because what goes on in the rest of the cell is too wild. And exposing DNA to this wild environment probably was a disadvantage and would cause more damage. So I am in the way I drew my tree of life, I have taken for granted that the nucleus was basically an archaea that integrated into another life form. Perhaps it was an RNA-based cell or a DNA-based cell like bacteria. And basically what they show here is a relationship that they were just taking bunches of bacteria, they were sequencing them, and they were looking for the kind of size that you expect for the genome of a bacteria. But they kept getting this result, which is there were a smaller genome into these bacteria. And at first they believed it was some error, or maybe it's a branch of DNA that broke. But eventually they realized, no, it's a full genome. It's a full genome that has all of the encoding. It encodes proteins. And so it's something else that lives in the bacteria. There is another life form in the bacteria that we were investigating, and it's this genome that they discovered. It's never been seen. So we only know this life form by its genome. It's never been visually seen. That's a fascinating thing. Normally, we discover life forms by you first see something and then you go into it. But this is where I say we haven't been searching for the right life forms. Because what these researchers have done, this is what we will need to do. Just take everything and look for replicative, self-replicative RNA. Look for life forms that are RNA only. Go out there, take all of the mud you can in the jungle or in your bedroom, and look at each of the cells. And try to develop a mass method of finding new life forms. New life forms that will be RNA replicative or RNA DNA tango. New life forms that will not rely on circular DNA of bacteria or double-strand DNA of eukaryotes. And you're going to find the life forms that I've predicted in the revolutionary phenotype. These guys are as close to it as I've ever seen. Because they just found the next step. They found the step that's at the extremity of my branch of life. So I commented in the revolutionary phenotype that this distinction between bacteria, archaea, and eukaryotes is irrelevant to the theory of phenotypic revolution. But the step before is very relevant to the theory of phenotypic revolutions. The question of why bacteria ended up with circular DNA, archaea as a DNA replicative mechanism that's at the intersection but closer to eukaryotes, and that your caryots ultimately grew into nucleus halving? This question can be resolved extremely well by the theory that I've laid out in my tweet. I have a wild bet to make on this lifeform duo. It may be representative of a primitive state that led to the evolution of the nucleus in eukaryotes. The nucleus was an infection living inside an RNA or DNA organism. Eventually, the wider organism stopped replicating, but the infection kept going and led to us. These events must have happened after the phenotypic revolution, so they are irrelevant to the core of my theory, but I've briefly speculated about the evolution of the nucleus in the revolutionary phenotype. The Science magazine gets it all backwards. The tiny microbe isn't evolving into a virus, it's evolving into us. And as I say in TRP, we are their viruses. So the title of the Science article is Microbe with Bizarrely Tiny Genome Maybe Evolving into a Virus. And they say this on the basis that, oh, well, this genome seems to be all based around just self-replicating, but doesn't seem to care about maintaining the cell. Well, those are the features of a virus, but those are also the features of a virus that would come and live into another organism forever, i.e. the nucleus. And I find it amazing that the authors in their article, they don't seem to discuss this hypothesis at all. There's no place in which they mention the theory of the evolution of the nucleus. And they are Canadian researchers. I mean, Asian Canadians. Halifax, Nova Scotia. So, and Japan, a lot of Japanese. Guys, please realize that you may have discovered an intermediate life form that led to eukaryotes. An intermediate life form, just as the nucleus was getting maybe there, or maybe it wasn't there all the time, or maybe it was slowly invading these cells, but eventually one cell retained the nucleus. So I believe that what we have here is the parasitic primitive that eventually leads to the nucleus. And the ultimate explanation of why we share so little resemblance in the DNA a copying mechanism with bacteria. Because here's the thing. I suggested in the revolutionary phenotype that we have two stories of revolutions. That is, DNA replication evolved twice. Because the DNA the replicase system of the double-strand eukaryotes versus the replicase system of bacteria appear to share no homology whatsoever. So it's like you have two different printers here that evolved, and you could have the hypothesis that one printer replaced the other, but you could also have the hypothesis that the DNA phenotypic revolution happened twice. It happened in bacteria, led to these bacteria, but these bacteria were, for some reason, incapable to expand further, probably because of a limitation of their circular DNA. But bacteria incapable with this DNA limitation, having circular DNA less stable, less copyable, less repairable. But eventually, a archaea parasite came in. And now that archaea parasite was in a perfect position. First, the bacteria tried eating it. It got it inside, but failed at digesting it. And then the archaea parasite was in a superb cell that it could control, that was weaker, and that he would be able eventually to conquer and completely control. Perhaps there was some transfer here to explain why, for example, there is still some homology between the ribosome of bacteria and eukaryotes. There may have been some transfer here or some inheritance from the archaea, but it could have been that there have been RNA to DNA or DNA to DNA transfers from the bacteria host to the archaea parasite that was a nucleus in becoming. And that would explain a lot. It would explain the two printer mechanism for DNA evolving separately and then somehow getting back together, and eventually the nucleus won, in the sense that the lesser replicative mechanism of the rest of the host cell eventually stopped reproducing, and it could have been neutralized by the nucleus. The nucleus may just have decided, we don't need you anymore. We're going to shut you down. We're going to produce proteins that digest you instead of you digesting me. And there you go. You had a eukaryote cell born. Unconventional wisdom says, not sure I am buying that one, to be honest. Bro, if you have another tellable story that's as tellable as mine, as like simple as mine, that explains the embedded state of the bilayer membrane of the nucleus, that explained the observation of these parasitic life forms where one bubble of genome appears to live in a greater bacteria genome being, and that explains the series of homologies and non-homologies that are observed between bacteria and eukaryotes. We're talking about millions of observations here, millions of letters of DNA that resemble themselves, others that don't resemble themselves. If you have an easy story to explain the complexity of what I just listed into a single story narrative that would explain the entire branch of life, go for it. Tell it to me. But as long as you don't have an alternative, I believe that this hypothesis is the only one that truly works. I cannot conceive of an alternative hypothesis that would better explain. Because how do you explain if the nucleus did not emerge from parasitism? How do you want it? Why is it that the nucleus, as the double layer membrane that it has, if it wasn't from another being that already had its coat? It's like when you encounter someone with two coats, he must have taken his second coat from somewhere. He either bought it or he took it from someone, and he's using it to hide his inner coat. The nucleus is in this situation. Shamrock Shake has shared with Unconventional Wisdom a link. Fair point. The books I read could have been biased or not actually practiced in reality. Unconventional Wisdom says, just because someone wrote that doesn't make it true. No offense to you and your research. Oh, but are you talking to me or you're talking to Shamrock Shake? Because they're talking about divorce. Okay, maybe I misinterpreted. And your comment was about a book called A Smaller Social History of Ancient Ireland. And they were debating the divorce, the history of divorce in Ireland. Okay, something for this box. Would love to know more about the machines and their physical mechanisms for measuring these things and how the computer modeling software functions to create the data, etc. Oh, well, I mean, there's no creation of data in analyzing DNA sequences. It's really a physical, chemical process that goes on. There's not much interpretation to it, although some level of error can happen at the single base level. But in general, it's a reading of a chemical interaction that goes on, and There's no computer or software interpretation of it. Sometimes the computer can speed up the process by reading the little chemical lines on the test. But generally, they can redo it in a way that they are very confident that it's this sequence. Charlie Kirk says that there is a massive push behind the scenes for President Trump to sign a mass amnesty deal. I got a couple of phone calls from people that you would call members of the ruling class. There is a movement afoot as I'm doing this broadcast. I can say this from first-hand experience that people are pushing President Trump for amnesty. They are pushing him for the mass legalization of illegals. Let's hope that they don't get their way. I'm sure that is an accurate thing that he's saying, because there's always a bunch of leftists and economic libertarians and corporate interests that want everyone to be legalized, because oh my God, would it ease their life if they didn't have to pay white people to do the job? Because white people have an ability to negotiate their salary, and they have an unwillingness to work under certain salaries. But I hope that Trump does the right thing and continues his deportation operation. While I was away during the weekend, there was a dramatic story in Texas, a flood as a death toll risen to 103. A bunch of little girls and little boys that were at some camps. They were at a camp where some Christian summer camp, and there was a flood, and a lot of them got carried away by the flood of mud that came in. And it's very sad, very emotional to be thinking about these kids and their parents and the pictures of the little girls. You know, they were really kids. But at the same time, I can't help but see this story and say, as a parent, I would never send my children to the summer school camp to be supervised by a single teenager and then two adults for 30 people. I don't believe in abandoning the care of your children to other beings, even if they're Christian, even if they're good people, because I can't help but think, when the mud was coming in, what difference would it make if each of these little girls were directly supervised by their biological parent? I think many may have been saved. I think if you are grouping up children under the care of single authorities, you are concentrating your risk in massive ways. And I would never do this. I would not do it, because I couldn't live with myself if I learned that my child is dead under the care of some other adult. Even if that adult is high IQ, has my trust, they've been verified by the police, they're not pedos. Even all these things, down the line, when you abandon your children to state authorities or church authorities, bad things happen. And I don't want to blame the parents in this case. It's an accident, so blame as a limited function here. But at the same time, you make your own luck in life. And I don't think that kind of thing would happen, because I'd be there for my daughter if a flood mud happened and she could get the full attention of my attempt at keeping her alive. I don't think that these children who got brought into the flood mud, I don't think they each benefited from the full dedication of an adult caring to save them. YouTuber Boogie2988 nearly drops ring and falls into lake while proposing to fiancé Desi. I was very moved by this documentary back, it was a year or two ago, I think, maybe 2 years ago, you know, there was a documentary where Boogie was a total loser and he has no money, and but there's this girl who's kind of cute, young, and fertile, and she falls in love with him. Well, they are now engaged officially.
Purple Red Super Chat is $20. Someone get that child away from that swamp monster.
Oh, but it is hard for Boogie to get on his knees.
Yes!
Yes! So apparently this was on stream or whatever. Well, YouTube celebrity serves again. Boogie2988 has captured a wife. Giles Garrity says, it's tragic looking at the victims and their smiling faces. Absolutely. Syria wants Lebanon's Tripoli in swap for Israel. Held Golan Heights. Okay, so I mean, this whole this new Syrian regime that supposedly is taken over by terrorists, but somehow the chief of the terrorist is basically a physical clone of Zelensky for some bizarre reason. Somehow, the random terrorist that is serving Israel interest in Syria and who kicked Assad out, somehow is a photocopy of Zelensky. Now, somehow, we're supposed to believe he's a terrorist, and we don't quite know where he's headed. I've been knowing where this guy is headed since the beginning, because it was an Israeli push. And I've always said this guy is going to side with Israel and its interests no matter what. So now what do we hear? What do they expect? So, of course, Israel has been interested at the Golan Heights for a long time, and they've been colonizing it, dominating it, and controlling it militarily. But they would want this situation to be regularized. So what they are asking now is they're asking Syria, hey, could you leave us the Golan Heights officially and sign a treaty that it's ours? And then you're going to get Tripoli. But Tripoli isn't... Israel isn't giving a city that they own. They're giving a city in another country. It's as if, you know, imagine the president of China, Xi Jinping, is coming to America and he says, Trump, I would like to sell you Mexico. And Trump says, all right, I'm gonna buy Mexico for $50 billion. And Mexico would be like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? But this is exactly what's happening here. You have a discussion between a terrorist group that took over Syria, but they did so for Israel and in line with the interest of Israel. And now suddenly they're being asked for a trade in which the trading partner is not even Syria. It's some other country. So this is Israel securing its positioning in the region as part of this whole desire of evicting parts of the countries around them that they think are dangerous to them. What else do we have in the news before we complete? There was a shootout between law enforcement, border patrol, and a guy who apparently ambushed them, was waiting for them with a rifle and tactical gear. The guy was shot and no one is dead. It seems the guy has been carried to the hospital, and the police agents who maybe have received some shooting toward their direction but are not dead. So no one died from the interaction. U.S. insurers are refusing to cover climate change risk zones. U.S. insurers are rapidly pulling coverage from homes in high-risk climate zones, particularly in California, Florida, and North Carolina. Millions of homeowners are facing non-renewals, impacting their ability to secure mortgages and causing housing market instability. Man. I don't know that it's climate change here, but there are places that will become shitholes. Unmaintainable shitholes. Because we're in a civil war, basically. We're in a civil war, and some neighborhood will not be maintainable. And insurer, because you know that the insurers are right when they make these decisions. They're getting away from troublesome areas. And for example, it's not climate change that led California to catch fire and for entire towns to be burned down. It's not climate change. It's just the unmaintainability of our society, the diversification of our public authorities, the incompetence, the crisis of competency of electrical in the electrical company, in the town, in the fireman services. You had the LGBT firewoman. So you have a whole lot of reasons, and I'm not even talking about crime and neighborhoods of violence and people just shooting a Uzi automatic weapon to each other in neighborhoods. Basically, there's all these reasons why, in the end, the state of property that we expected in Western civilization will be unmaintainable. And the only proper response to this is sell and run. You're going to have to sell and run to more northern positions because this is about to become Africa. Ruth Sternwood says, it is almost as if they think the climate is enshittening. Enshittening? I'm not sure what you mean here. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is the end of the show, which also means that this is the great moment. Greatest Whitest North has been crying on the regular chat for weeks now that I wasn't adding his name to the outro. So I have made a spectacular outro in which he's centrally featured. You know, Friday, Greatest Whitest left the regular chat very frustrated because I had spent 2 days practicing with AI recomposition of Kurt Cobain, and he didn't like it, and he said, "What about my name in the outro?" Well, there's your name in the outro.